May it please the court. The primary question in this case is whether the good cause exception in the abuse and neglect statutes, another sword intended to protect children of this state, will also be flipped and turned into a shield to protect alleged perpetrators. This time, from the probative force of evidence of abuse developed during the first 30 days of an investigation. So this case is not decided on the merits. The trial court's judgment reads, the decision to make the finding of abuse was not based upon that additional evidence, but upon evidence received within the 30-day period. Therefore, the Children's Division did not show good cause for the delay. That finding is an erroneous declaration of law, a misapplication of law, and it's against the weight of the evidence. Finding the absence of good cause for a reason that has nothing to do with whether good cause exists in the first place only serves to punish the division for not developing additional evidence, another result in conflict with the remedial purpose of these statutes and the legislature's intent. Moreover, there's absolutely no basis in the language of the statute for a punitive result. Not developing additional evidence doesn't tell us whether good cause existed in the first place at the 30-day mark. Good cause is a good and sufficient reason, not an arbitrary reason or a whim. It's a low bar.
Suppose the court finds that these timelines are directory. Should the individual be able to challenge good cause in the de novo judicial review?
I believe so, Your Honor.
And what standard ought to apply to that?
Good cause has been defined as a good and sufficient reason, not an arbitrary reason, not a whim. It existed in this case law enforcement was assisting the division with the investigation. The division was relying on law enforcement to obtain evidence that would prove more convincingly than the abuse than the evidence it already had. According to statute, the division has to contact local law enforcement in every case when they receive a report, and the division did. According to statute, the local law enforcement must either assist or provide in writing why they're not going to assist, and they did assist in this case. The additional evidence the division wanted to obtain was a transcript of text messages and photographs between the alleged perpetrator and the child, a transcript prepared by the child's cell phone carrier. The investigator believed that type of transcript would show abuse more convincingly.
Opposing counsel seems to argue that you could have independently sought that transcript from the cell phone carrier and therefore should not have relied on the police to do that.
The division could ask, the division could not compel, and the division could not go to court to compel. But I caution the court.
You can't get a subpoena, you're saying?
No, there's no authorization for that in those statute. I caution the court, the trial court's decision is not based on what the investigator could or could not have done.
You're saying the court looked back at the end of 90 days or whatever time and said, well, you didn't find much more, therefore there wasn't good cause, and
exactly.
They should decide as of the time.
Exactly. What the investigator did or did not do was not what the court made its decision upon.
By the same logic, then, if 30 days comes and the division says, well, we're just going to hold it open and hope something happens, and then they get on day 58 great evidence, a videotape, then under the trial court's logic, then they would have had good cause to extend the investigation.
Well, I don't think the division can just say, oh, it's the 30th day, we want some more time, let's just do it. It needs to be good cause.
Well, the trial court thought that. That's what I'm saying. The trial court's logic was that you don't care what they thought, what they knew then. You care what they later turned out to turn up.
I don't agree with that part, because what was developed later doesn't tell us whether good cause existed at the 30 days. What happened between 31 and 90 doesn't tell us.
So what would the court, if the court had looked at what they knew at 30 days, what would the court have found here?
Well, the court should have looked at the evidence developed in that 30 days, why the investigator thought there was good cause.
And what decided, was, tell us what the good cause is.
Well, the good cause is that the investigator had evidence that abuse occurred. She had admissions and she had statements and she had a mother's prepared transcript. But the alleged perpetrator refused to be interviewed, refused to say anything. And she was concerned that when the case went to the review board or even on judicial review later on, the alleged perpetrator would deny.
Well, that's why I asked, are they limited to the investigation results, or can they continue investigating after can they continue investigating after the 30 days and 90 days, or are they limited to what they found at that time? Because if they could keep investigating, why is that
well,
a reason?
They can investigate between the 30th and the 90th.
And after the 90th, can they keep, if there's going to be a hearing or go to court, could they keep developing additional evidence?
Yes, I think they can.
Well, no, wait.
As a practical matter, once the determination is made, that doesn't occur.
But earlier, after the determination is made, if they develop additional evidence, can that be introduced either in front of the board or in de novo judicial review?
After the determination is
right.
made? There's no prohibition against it in the statutes. But it's a practical matter. There are many cases. Investigators are very busy. It doesn't happen, I'm sure, though there's no prohibition against it.
If the trial court found good cause, what's our standard of review for such a finding of fact?
It would be the weight of the evidence. But it's more than that. It's all three of the traditional types of review in court-tried cases, Your Honor. It's an erroneous declaration and a misapplication, because what happens after a certain date doesn't tell us what existed on that certain date. It's just because nothing was developed.
Well, if your argument is that this is discretionary, why would they need to have a language in there except for good cause found? If it's a discretionary or directory.
Well. The good cause is an exception, which makes 30 days aspirational.
It wouldn't be necessary to have the good cause if it's purely directory, right?
It's not purely directory. It's not purely directory, which is why on judicial review, good cause may be looked at. But that's a low bar. It's a very low bar.
It sets deadlines the agency's supposed to meet, doesn't it? And if there's no good cause, they're supposed to do it in 30 days. The question before us is what the consequence is of failing to meet it.
That's one way to look at it. And the consequence of...
Well, is that the way the legislature intended us to look at it?
The legislature intended to let the division go beyond 30 days if it had good cause, and go beyond 90 days if there had been no decision yet.
Yeah, is there anywhere that indicates that they intended for the division to stop before making a determination in any circumstance other than that one provision where they sidetrack it off for assessment and services?
Not that I know of.
I mean, that seems to be the central question. Do they have authority to make a determination, or is that authority limited to in time?
It's not limited in time, because we have an exception, an explicit exception, and it's not limited at the 90-day mark, because going beyond it is consistent with the statutory language of any determination, a determination that has been made. When it hasn't been made, they can go beyond.
What happened in this case between the 90-day deadline and the 133rd day?
Just before the 90th day, on the 89th day, the investigator spoke to the detective, who said that the prosecutor was reviewing the case. He had obtained photos, which is one of the other things.
Did the investigator have, what I'm asking is, did the investigator have any more information on the 133rd day than the investigator had on the 90th day?
No.
So the investigator made a determination on the 133rd day based on the same information available on the 89th day.
Yes.
But if I understood your argument in your brief, it was that they believed that, that they were going to get official records and not simply the mother's transcripts of the cell phones, and that's what they were waiting on, and at some point decided it was no longer reasonable to wait since nothing was coming from the prosecutor. So that's when they
that's
concluded
right.
the investigation and gave the notice.
But clearly there was available to the investigators sufficient information to determine by preponderance of the evidence that the that there was child abuse.
Yes. Yes. She was concerned that the case may be weak, though.
She wanted more evidence.
She wanted
better evidence, but there was enough evidence.
She wanted more to protect her case from attack on judicial review.
And opposing counsel relies on that strongly and says that, you know, if this was enough evidence, it did proceed based on that, or she did proceed based on it later, the statute, that was sufficient under the statute to conclude there wasn't, I don't know if you'd say good cause or whatever, but there was no legal basis to wait more than the 90 days here where she had sufficient information and just wanted more. What can you address that?
Well, the question here is good cause, because the
that's
trial
the
court
30-day
said,
question. Yeah.
And the question is good cause. And not developing evidence beyond a certain period of time doesn't show whether good cause existed just before then.
Yeah, yeah, I'm talking
There's
about
no
the 90 days.
Connection.
What justified not finishing the report in 90 days when she had enough, she just wanted more?
Well, she knows that the process doesn't stop with her determination. It can go to administrative review, and it can go to judicial review.
So,
and she knows the alleged perpetrator was not cooperating.
So when's the deadline? What's the deadline? At 133, she begins to worry that that's too much time. How do you decide that it's okay to go 133 days? Maybe you can go 180 days, as long as she thinks there's going to be more evidence. If it's not a line at 90 days, where is the line?
The line for this investigator was
What legally, where should a line be drawn?
Could you take 5 years? I presume you could not. So where's the line is the question.
Certainly not 5 years.
Why not?
There's some point where the line is too long.
And,
probably,
and we have to worry about that issue, and that's what I'm asking. What are you telling us?
It probably relates to prejudice to the alleged perpetrator, particularly with respect to the loss of evidence that would exonerate the perpetrator.
Which could be a very long time.
It could be. It could be a short time. It all depends on the circumstances.
Counsel, let me ask this question.
Which is why we have judicial review to look at those circumstances.
What's the limit? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
In determining what the consequence is in this case, does it make more sense to rely on what the statute says or what the statute doesn't say to determine what the consequence is? Because earlier there in your argument, you suggested, well, since there's no consequence, this is what they intended. And I'm trying to see, does that really make sense in trying to evaluate what the legislature intended to think about what they didn't say as opposed to what they did say in the statute?
I think the presence or absence of a consequence, legislative or judicial, is not as important as the remedial nature of the statutes, which means that they should be construed in favor of the child so long as that construction is construed to remedy the problem they address, so long as that construction is consistent with the rest of the statutory language. In this case, it is.
Yeah. And I guess in Judge Lynch writing for Fry said, well, we don't need to do any construction. It's clear. I mean, that's the way that he looked at the scheme.
That was the way the lower court looked at it.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel. You'll still have some time on rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I would like to start with the fact question here. I feel like I'm compelled to respond to this question of good cause and whether or not good cause was established, whether there's a fact finding made by the trial court. The transcript is before the court, and the transcript is clear. In this case, it's even more clear than in others because the judge, in this case, Commissioner Rosen, led her own direct examination of the social worker. And she asked all of these very pertinent questions that this court was asking today of Mr. Gardner. What did you do between the 30th and the 90th day?
Why does that matter? I mean, if on the 30th day she thought, you know, I want official cell phone records, not this mother's transcript, because somebody may say it's not accurate, why isn't that good cause?
The good cause in this case, and I guess the answer to that question, the reason it's not, is the social worker testified in that examination. I sat down with the alleged victim here when the alleged victim had her phone, and I decided not to ask her to look at it. I could have asked the mother to look at the phone. I didn't ask her to look at it either. I could have asked law enforcement to look at the phone,
Why isn't wanting official transcripts, if you can get them, good cause? There may be ways you can look yourself at the phone and see what it says, but do we have anything to guide us on how to determine what's good cause, I guess?
I think the guide would be the number of days that you have in which to investigate. And if you cannot find, I mean, assuredly in any investigation.
What's good cause?
In this case, the statute does not define what good cause would be, insofar as the only enumerated exception would be the death of a child. That would be a good cause exception to the investigation ending at 30
but
days.
I'm understanding you to argue that if you have enough to bring a charge, then it can't be good cause to extend it, in effect, is what you're saying. If she would have or could have had enough in 30 days, then there can't be good cause. And I don't know of any case that says that.
Your Honor, I don't believe that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I mean, what I'm trying to say is that though I haven't prepared a definition of what I think good cause may be in some hypothetical circumstances that aren't before this court, I will posit to the court, this social worker in this department in this context did not establish good cause to the satisfaction of this trial judge.
And because
she identifies in her holding, and this is in the judgment, in the legal file, 21 facts, 21 hypothetical reasons for good cause, and then in the next paragraph says, they have not established good cause. It's not a matter of her simply saying, well, co-investigation with law enforcement is the only hypothetical reason you could have co-investigation, and I don't believe that. She conducted a very thorough analysis of the facts in this case, and in fact asked this social worker, this woman directly, why is it, you said these records were very important to you, why is it you did not maintain weekly contacts with law enforcement, to which the transcript, in the transcript, the woman says in response to that, I don't know, it's justified by me possibly being on vacation, by being out of the office. The judge looked at that and said, well, you're going to come in and argue to me that you should have had more time to investigate, but then on the same breath you say, I didn't do it because I was probably out of the office. I was probably on vacation. And I don't know exactly what good cause would be in every case, but I will say to this court that under these circumstances, this case, that is not, you have not demonstrated good cause reason for delaying if your only excuse is I was on vacation.
So you're saying that finding of fact by the trial court, what kind of deference should we give that?
I think it's against whether that finding was against the weight of the evidence.
So
that's the standard of review, and I would argue to this court that her finding was not against the weight of the evidence. She made fact determinations that this social worker did not demonstrate good cause reason for delaying this to the 128th day.
In this scenario, good cause, the investigator always gets the benefit of hindsight to demonstrate good cause, correct? Because they don't have to do it ahead of time.
That's correct.
So even in this case, not only at the time, but this investigator got the benefit of hindsight 2020 to see if they could still demonstrate good cause.
That's correct.
If she had later found evidence that exonerated your client completely, you wouldn't have any problem with her extending the investigation for that purpose.
Well, Your Honor, I would respond to that, first of all, by saying the use of the term exonerate, I understand what you're getting at here, but I think that
well, that proved beyond any question that it was an unsubstantiated report. Yeah. I don't mean to suggest that she's been charged because she hasn't been.
In response to that question, if that finding came beyond the 90 days, I'd say it wouldn't matter because at that point, our client cannot be, as a matter of law, placed upon the register.
Well, the trial court found that there was sufficient basis to substantiate the report before the 30th day, right?
No.
Well,
I will say that the trial court found that the reasons given for substantiating the report were found within the first 30 days. The The trial court never said that that evidence did, in fact, establish a substantiated good cause reason.
Right. The witness testified that the evidence was sufficient to substantiate the report and that all of that evidence was in hand before the 30th day.
That was one of her multiple findings, that's
right.
Correct.
So why, if the statute is mandatory, why is the appropriate remedy to dispense with this report or declare it to be unsubstantiated when nobody has found that the facts support that conclusion?
I'm compelled to resort to the idea that the reason that is the case is because words in a statute have meaning, and in fact, in this case, if you treat those deadlines as merely directory, the statute has no import. The same would be true in other contexts of our jurisprudence, where you have criminal investigations that may, in fact, go beyond the statute of limitations, and you may make the argument, well, this evidence could have been helpful. It could have gone beyond that, so why not allow those cases to go beyond the statute of limitations? It doesn't hurt anybody, right?
Well, one consequence could be you cut off the record at 90 days because you're supposed to have done it then. So instead of dismissing it, you just look at what you had at 90 days because the legislature wanted you to hurry up, and that would certainly be something that would make the social workers and others move their investigation along if anything after 90 days didn't get included. Can you address that? And also, Judge Fisher said made a good point that we try not to add words to the statute, but aren't you asking us to add words to the statute? You're saying, and if the report is not issued in 90 days, the case shall be dismissed.
I'm asking this court to interpret this statute within the context of all of the factors here, all circumstances of it, starting with the plain language of the statute. With respect to your first question about the loss of jurisdiction, respondent in both the Williams and Frye case have pointed to the myriad of cases in this court and others that stand for the proposition that administrative bodies only have such jurisdiction. I understand there's a difference between jurisdiction and authority. In Livingston Manor, which is a Western District case, they say a basic tenet of administrative law provides that, quote, an administrative agency has only such jurisdiction or authority as may be granted by the legislature. So I understand we're not talking about jurisdiction, we're talking about authority. A basic tenet of our law in Missouri is that administrative agencies only have the power and the authority which is granted to them by the legislature. We would argue then.
And so what happens if they exceed their authority? Does it mean they have they never had any authority in effect to begin with, or just that their authority stops at the point set?
At such time they have not complied with the statute, they lose authority to continue acting under the statute, would be our argument. And it is our argument, and we stated that in our brief.
Your opponent argues that every case that has considered timelines for administrative agencies for decisions has found them not to be mandatory. Do you agree? Do you have cases that have found timelines to be mandatory in the administrative proceeding?
Well, I would start the answer with the time deadline question. There are four cases we've cited from the Supreme Court, being Bauer v. Transitional School District, Southwestern Bellevue, Mann State v. Tier, and Garza v. Swara. Obviously, there are other cases that are not Supreme Court cases, but Frye v. and Williams are two Court of Appeals cases that did, in fact, hold that these time limits were mandatory. But within those cases, every single one of them has held that you have to look at all of the facts and all of the circumstances of the statute. You cannot look at it in a vacuum. And this idea of the absence or presence of a penalty provision, every court has uniformly held that that is but one factor that should be analyzed in the context of many others.
And in the context of public officials performing their duties and administrative agencies, is there any court that has held it's a mandatory, not directory?
Well, I would argue that in Tier, when they're talking about the timing within which you need to establish prior offender status, they did hold in that case it is mandatory. I mean, it is not, you know, per se a 90-day or 120-day deadline, but it does say there is a time.
But they didn't say Tier couldn't be convicted. They just said he couldn't be convicted of the enhancement. He couldn't be sentenced under the enhancement. Under your theory, he should be acquitted and allowed to go free completely.
And that's a very good point, Your Honor. In our case, we are absolutely not saying they cannot be acquitted. We are saying that the state cannot avail itself of the civil remedy which accompanies criminal prosecution. This court in Jameson addressed that very question. In that case, the court or the state argued they shouldn't have to comply with these because it's going to hurt children and children are going to be subject to all sorts of abuses. And this court held due process rights should not be cast aside in the name of protecting one party over the other. And in addition, this registry is merely a civil registry that acts in conjunction with the law enforcement arm and went in great lengths and talked about the fact that these criminal investigations are going to continue regardless. And in fact, in our case, the state argued that the reason they delayed was because they were working with law enforcement.
But your client didn't go on the registry until she went before the review board, with full notice and a full opportunity to be heard in a full trial-like setting, right?
That is correct.
So the remedy is not going on the registry. The remedy is going before the review board. I mean, that's what the division wants, is to proceed to the review board, like filing a charge.
We are arguing in this case that you don't reach that question of whether or not there has been a due process deprivation and whether or not she has in fact had her liberty interest stripped of her before the due process. We would argue that the Western District had it correct when they held in the footnote that the fact of a due process deprivation is moot in determining whether this statute is mandatory. However, the court went on to further say, to argue that you do not have due process rights during the investigative stage cannot be taken seriously. But it is the process attendance upon the deprivation of that due process right, which is the focus here.
And so why does that result in throwing out the entire thing? Or why don't we look at whether you got due process? If you're saying that that's what's being protected here, why don't we look at your due process rights and what rights you had and whether they were protected and whether violation of the 90-day rule violated your due process rights, if that's the interest that's being protected, as opposed to simply a deadline that happens to be set.
Your Honor, we suggest that looking at the liberty interest at stake and what these statutes are intended to protect is in fact a determination or a consideration that this court should consider.
It's certainly a consideration, but legislatures don't decide due process. If they said you had 3 days or 3 years, this court would decide what due process was. Due process doesn't change because the legislature sets deadlines at 60 days or 90 days or 120 days.
I think that due process, the principles of due process can be impacted by what the legislature
Absolutely.
Has set out in law. And the idea of due process, like this court said in Jameson, it is a flexible concept that changes from case to case. But in this case, we would argue that at a minimum, the due process that it should be afforded to alleged perpetrators is that which is set out in the statute. And here,
Is there any showing or claim of prejudice in the difference between the 90 days and the 133 days?
Your Honor, we would respectfully submit that showing prejudice, again, talk about a lack of citation here. We don't have any cases in Missouri that say whether a statute is mandatory or directory rises and falls upon whether or not someone has in fact been prejudiced. The same would be true in arguably the Fourth Amendment.
No, I certainly agree that that wouldn't be decisive. I'm asking if this court were to find it were directory, that wouldn't mean your client had no basis to seek relief. If your client was prejudiced by the delay, or due process rights were otherwise violated.
I would argue that her due process rights would not have been violated in this case if there are no time deadlines to be enforceable. If the court holds that shall is actually may, and it's merely directory, you talk about a writ of mandamus, availing yourself of a writ would not help her here, because this court would be holding today that these deadlines are not enforceable in any case. It's merely directory, so what relief is she ever going to get, or a similarly situated litigant going to have in the future? This court has to decide, and obviously will decide, whether or not these time deadlines are mandatory or directory. And talking furthermore about the purpose of the statute, I do find it very curious. We hear argument about this. 210.145, really, with respect to the court, I would suggest gets no more simple than this. The division shall develop protocols which give priority to, quote, providing due process for those accused of child abuse or neglect, and developing structured decision-making protocols to be utilized for all children and neglect reports. It is the quintessential purpose of 210.145. Maybe not the entire overarching Child Abuse Act, but with respect to this particular subsection, chapter 210.145, the purpose is ensuring due process protections and making sure that these investigations are done in a structured decision-making way. And if that has not been done, then we argue that is, in fact, the violation.
Your opponent argues that there are cases where an investigation could not legitimately be, under any circumstances, be completed within 90 days. And therefore, that factor should be considered in whether determining it's mandatory or directory. And do you disagree with that? Do you argue to us that the standard could be met, or are you arguing that even if they're under the best of circumstances it can't be, then that's just too bad?
Your Honor, I would suggest to you that there may certainly be cases in which then the investigation cannot be completed. I would argue, though,
that precludes that proceeding.
Consistent with the rule of law, if that circumstance is prohibiting the Department of Social Services from functioning as the legislature intended, the General Assembly is within the sole province of making that change legislatively. And they did it in 2007 when they said, in cases of child death, we will in fact permit this statute to extend on. We will allow your authority to extend on to investigate into the future because we as the General Assembly deem that to be an important interest. And if in the future, after this opinion, the General Assembly believes that there should be further exceptions, and mind you, there wouldn't need to be an exception if this was merely a directory term, they can and they have so legislated. And that is what we're asking the court to do here, is to allow the General Assembly to operate as it is intended to operate and create the law that will protect the children and, in addition, protect alleged perpetrators, as the statute they've clearly done.
Counsel, before we lose you, if the court finds that these are directory and not mandatory, my understanding is that you have an alternative claim of due process. Is that correct, or did I miss it?
That's correct.
Okay. And in your petition, the only claim that I can find is this one in paragraph 44, that inclusion of Ms. Williams' name on the registry prior to final court adjudication is a violation of Ms. Williams' constitutional rights of due process and equal protection, and constitutes a wrongful contravention of the agency's own policies. Is that the only due process claim you have? I mean, that's the only one I see. And it really doesn't speak to the question of the 60 or 90 days. It speaks to putting her name on the registry prior to final court adjudication.
Which is not raised up here.
The argument that I believe we intended to make, I thought it was in the brief, was that the due process violation is the deprivation of the liberty interest without compliance with the statute. Without compliance. Jameson addressed not an identical issue, obviously.
I think the question is, was that preserved at the trial court level?
I believe it was. And furthermore, I would suggest that the Western District had it correct when they decided that the finding of a deprivation does not control whether or not the statute is mandatory or directory. And there are no cases in Missouri that have analyzed this question, let alone this question of whether there's some implied good cause exception that has risen or fallen on this question of, well, was the due process violated? And if the answer is yes, then at that point we'll find this term to be mandatory.
In regard to what's been preserved here, you weren't aggrieved by any decision made by the trial court in this case, were you?
We've not been aggrieved by any decision of the trial court.
Further questions?
Except I just want to say good trial by fire beginning to your arguments in this case.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel.
Mr. Gardner, so I don't have to wait until you're all the way out of time. I'll just jump before you're ready to start. The trial court here didn't reach the question of whether on de novo review, the facts were sufficient to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that the report was substantiated.
Did not do that explicitly, Your Honor.
Okay. So if we determine that if the court accepts your arguments, determines that these are directory and not mandatory and that there's no constitutional violation, then is the proper remedy to remand for the court to consider that issue?
No, let me tell you why. There's a stipulation in this case. The stipulation occurred on judicial review. It didn't happen earlier. And the trial court repeated that stipulation in the judgment and ordered the perpetrator's name removed from the registry anyway. That stipulation amounts to proof of abuse by a preponderance of the evidence. And because it's a stipulation, the only thing for the trial court to do is to draw the correct legal conclusion from the stipulation and not look at the facts.
Well, is there any debate about whether it's sufficient to satisfy a preponderance?
I don't believe there is.
Okay.
Because I think the stipulation says that it's a preponderance.
Okay. So the only issue then for the court was whether to even reach that issue, and the trial court found that it couldn't because it believed the deadlines were directory. Or mandatory. I'm
found
sorry.
All kinds of ways to avoid it.
And I don't want to go backwards in time on you, but I'm going to. Is the remedy in the prior case to remand for that determination or to simply reverse, which is what you said at the podium?
I think the remedy in the prior case is to remand for a determination of whether abuse or neglect occurred.
Okay. All right. Now, I'm sorry, you can do your rebuttal.
I wanted to say a couple of things about the statutory construction. Administrative agencies have the powers granted to them by the legislature and those that are reasonably implied from that legislative grant. It's not just limited to the specific words in the legislature. And I also want to point out that the investigator does not have the benefit of hindsight. She must document in the information system the good cause reason for going beyond the 30 days. So early on in this case, the reason for the good cause is established, and that reason, you know, should not shift and adjust to the circumstances as it goes along. Let me say one thing about the statute that talks about providing due process, making protocols to provide due process. That statute needs to be construed consistently with Artman and Jameson. The division or the department has implemented that statute by promulgating two sets of regulations. One is the regulations that deal with the procedures before the review board, which provide the due process due there. And the other has to do with, at the very beginning of a case when a report is made, the protocols deal with, is this case going to be investigated or is it going to go to the family-centered type services, family services type route? Those are the protocols that the statute refers to. The 2007 amendment also must be construed consistently with the remedial purpose of the statute. It only clarifies for the future legislative intent in death cases. It eliminates the good cause exception in death cases, saying in effect that a death is enough cause. And it doesn't address death investigations after 2007. Or before 2007, rather, and it doesn't address non-death investigations. That construction is consistent with the remedial purpose. So in the face of the stipulation of abuse in this case, a result in the trial court that adjudicates the case outside of the merits is in conflict with the remedial purpose of these statutes.
Counsel, you're out of time. Is there any further questions of the court?
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The matter will be taken under advisement.